Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response to the day for the 21st of Av. Thank you for joining us. Today we're going to do a response about shipping wooden barrels, and while that sounds like a relatively technical issue, it's actually going to be a pretty interesting conversation about how leaders respond to their communities not meeting the highest standards of observance, meaning one situation in halacha would be you go to your posek, you ask him a question, and he tells you the answer, and everybody keeps it, and they keep the halacha. Or there's a paragraph in Shulchan Aruch, and that's the way people act. So that's an uncomplicated situation. There's nothing to do. So people say to you, what's the halacha? You tell them the halacha, and they keep it. Question is, what happens when people don't keep the halacha the way they're supposed to, and then something goes wrong, and then you have to react to it? So that's going to be the example we're going to see here. And it's from Shut Shoel V'Nishal Yoredeh, the first volume, Yoredeh 75. So Shut Shoel V'Nishal, which means the response of asked and answered, which is a great name for a Shut, because that's what Shut are, they're She'elot U'Tshuvot, they're questions and responses. So the respondent, the author of Shut Shoel V'Nishal is the man named Rav Moshe Chalfon HaKohen. He lived from 1874 to 1950. He was born in Djerba. So Djerba is an island off the coast of Tunisia that has had a Jewish community for thousands of years. And according to Wikipedia, as of 2011, still had 1,000 Jews in it, which is not a tiny Jewish community, which is not, I mean, for a country it is, but for not for a particular city. So the island of Djerba has a long Jewish history, a long Torah history of people living there and studying Torah and knowing Torah. This Rav Moshe Chalfon HaKohen, actually just looked it up. Rav Yosef, I had not remembered seeing him quoted all that often, but he quotes him 258 times between Yabi Omer and Yechavidah, and refers to him as a Gaon. And he was really just a generation before Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef was born in 1920, so he's a generation and a half before him, so it's fairly new and fairly alive. So the 21st of Av in 1923, Rav Chalfon HaKohen was asked, he was a question about transporting wooden barrels of wine. So wine is an issue because there's a problem of what's called stam yenam. There's also a problem of yayin nesek. Yayin nesek is wine which non-Jews have actually used to as part of a religious service having to do with an idolatrous religion. But stam yenam is that back in the time of the Gemara, Chazal prohibited even just wine touched by a non-Jew, at least for drinking. So Halacha is worried that if you leave non-Jew with access to a wooden barrel, now a wooden barrel is closed, so you might say that's fine, but there's always a worry. There was always a worry about that the non-Jew, when if we're not around, the non-Jew might decide to take some wine. It's not that we think the non-Jew is going to specifically try to ruin our wine for us. It's that the non-Jew won't realize the stakes or the issues and will therefore just decide to take some wine. So that's why we have double seals, right? Double seals, that whole idea, if you look at kosher wine bottles, you'll have the seal and then you'll have a paste over it and it'll be sealed on. And all of that is to avoid issues of non-Jews having access to the wine when there aren't Jews around. So with a wooden barrel, wooden barrels are made of staves. They're not one solid piece of wood that's fashioned into a barrel. It's a bunch of pieces of wood together that are bound on the top and on the bottom by a metal ring, and that's what keeps them together. So especially in times gone by, I think barrels have gotten somewhat better, but if you took something strong, you could maybe pry apart the staves a little bit, because remember, you don't have to pull out anything solid, you don't have to pull out a liquid. So you make a small gap between the staves, between the wooden pieces of the barrel, you can get out some wine. So the non-Jew, there's a huge barrel, he might be thirsty, he might say to himself, you know what, I'll just open a little bit, I'll pull out a cup of wine, and we're going to miss a cup of wine in a whole big barrel of wine. Which may or may not be true, and as a theft issue is one question, but as a stam yenam issue, as a turning it into one that has been touched by a Jew, by a non-Jew, and therefore prohibited to Jews, that's in this case the more significant issue, because liquid is all one long flow, as far as halacha is concerned. So if the non-Jew twists open the staves, like pries apart the staves, takes a cup of wine, the whole barrel becomes wine touched by a non-Jew. So what do we do about that? The Gemara had said, you take a barrel like that, if you wrap it in a bag, and then you seal the bag, and you sign it in Hebrew, that's going to be enough of a barrier the non-Jew won't do it. Because in that situation, if the non-Jew wanted to take some wine without being caught, without it being noticed, he would have to break the seal, open the bag, then pry apart the staves of the wooden barrel, put the barrel back in the bag, reseal it in the exact same way, and then sign it in Hebrew. So none of that is easy to replicate, and therefore that was seen as enough of a barrier for the non-Jew that we don't have to worry then, that, you know, because we're worried about here is one option would have been to just watch this wine all the time, have a Jew watch, and then we would know that no non-Jew did that to the barrel. But if you want to ship it with non-Jews, and you don't want to have to send a mashgiach along, so what could you do? So that was the solution to what you could do. Then the case that came to Rabbi Kalfon HaKohen, they didn't put it in a bag. They had the barrel. They put a wooden cover on the barrel and a cloth covering on that cover. And they wrote kosher on that cover, and then they sealed it. They banged it on with nails in a certain kind of a design, which would be hard to replicate, which would help assume that the non-Jew hadn't opened the barrel. So they don't have a bag over the whole thing. That's one question that comes up. Also, on the side of the barrel, there's an opening to draw wine out of the barrel, and that's closed by a wooden peg. Now, that wooden peg jutted out a little bit. Didn't jut out a lot, but it jutted out a little bit. And there was no seal on that peg. Usually, in these situations, the way that you made sure that there was no problem about the non-Jew taking out the peg, taking some wine, and just sticking the peg back in, was that you put a seal over the peg in order to make it, again, like a double seal. Because if we get two things in the way of taking out the wine, then that's usually seen as good enough. But in this case, that hadn't happened. So there was also a problem. Now, the worst part of the case, or that worst as it terrible, but the worst is in terms of being able to assume that you can drink this wine or use this wine from now on by a Jew, is that the barrel was down about 50 liters. That's what it says in the tshuva, in the question, by the time it got to its destination. Meaning people bring a barrel, it has whatever number of liters it has, they give it over to the non-Jews to transport it. When it gets to the new place, it's down 50 liters. So it's not just the question of the loss of the wine, that's a financial question. But now the question is going to be, what about the rest of the wine? All right. Now, I don't know exactly how big their barrels were. They don't say how big the barrel was and what percentage of that was. But from what I've been able to tell, I did a little bit of research online. I don't know well. If you know about barrels and you want to email me at grothst@gmail.com, you could educate me on this issue. As far as I could tell, the sizes of barrels that we have, 50 liters seems like a lot for almost any feasible size of a wine barrel. It seems like it was a very significant amount. Now, that could, it won't really come up with the tshuva, but that could help or that could hurt, because you could say, if it's 50 liters, it can't be that the non-Jews would be so stupid as to steal 50 liters of wine and think they're going to get away with it. So that maybe it's so much that it'll be an indication that something else happened rather than that the wine was taken out by the non-Jews. Now when it comes to the answers, Rav Kalfon HaKohen in Shut Shoel V'Nishal, which I forgot to mention before, is also very prolific. I've sometimes noted that when you try to start looking for tshuvot written on a certain Jewish date, Rav Moshe Feinstein often has multiple tshuvot written those dates, because he was A, prolific, he wrote a lot of responsa, and B, he dated his responsa conscientiously or regularly. Rav Kalfon HaKohen Shut Shoel V'Nishal is another one that is very, very frequently on the list that you'll find five or six tshuvot on a particular Hebrew date. So in this particular instance, he starts by noticing that when the Shulchan Aruch in Yeredeia 130 rules on these kinds of issues, the Shulchan Aruch differentiates clay barrels from wooden barrels. Okay, so with clay, you can't pry it apart in the middle because it's clay, it's all one piece. And so you can only get it through the opening. So as long as you have a double seal on the opening, you can be sure that it's considered halakhically enough of a barrier that the non-Jew won't bother doing it. It's important to point out that the assumption here isn't that it's impossible. So somebody said to you, well, I see the double seal. Of course you can open it. The issue was, the Gemara said, that once there's a double seal, for all of the non-Jew could open it and reseal it, they wouldn't bother because it's too much of a pain and it's too hard to do, and there are other places to get their wine. It's not the exact same thing, but it's somewhat akin to when people will say, you know, have a home alarm system or home burglary system, even though it's clear that a determined burglar can generally get past those things. The point is that by putting them in, it will mean that most burglars will just say, I might as well go somewhere else and try somewhere else. With a wooden barrel, where you don't have, it's not so hard to get into it because you can pry apart the staves. A double seal isn't going to be good enough. You're going to have to put it into a bag, and the bag has to not have seams. Why does the bag not have the seams? Because then you could tear apart the seams of the bag and pry open the staves. None of those are real seals, and all you have to do is re-sew the bag. But you could re-sew a bag with seams without anybody noticing that you've done it. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch says. Shulchan Aruch says wooden barrel has to put into a bag, and the bag has to have those seams. Okay. That's not the contemporary practice. That's not what he knows. That's not the contemporary practice of his time. In his, where he lived, in Gerba, Jews would ship wooden barrels, and they'd only have a double seal. They would not put it into a bag. And he reports he was 13 or 14 years old, he says, and there was a great rabbi, I didn't recognize the name, but there was a great rabbi from Gerba for the generation before him. And he asked him about this. So first, let's note that this Moshe Chalfon HaKohen, when he was 13 or 14, was already involved enough in halakha and in caring about halakhic issues that he's noticing that it contradicts the Yoredeia, Kuf Lamed, all right, that paragraph in Yoredeia that has to do with shipping wine. So it takes a certain kind of a person to have already been up to that part of Yoredeia at that age. So he says this to this great rabbi. He says, doesn't it require that you put it in a bag and not just double seal it? And this other rabbi, this Mahardach, pulls out a Shulchan Aruch, read him what was written there, and wouldn't say anything else. So it sounds like what he means is that this rabbi was saying to him, yeah, you need a bag. You need to put a bag around the wooden barrels, but this is what people were doing, and this is what we were doing. So what do you do with that? Right? What do you do with that in that situation? Now, if they ship it to Gerba that way, you would wonder whether they would drink this wine, this from Moshe Chalfon HaKohen and his predecessor. But what do you do when this community is not doing the right thing? So if Chalfon HaKohen says his practice has been to refrain from comment, and that if anybody asks him, he tells them they need to do it the way the Shulchan Aruch says to do it, which is to put it into a bag. Others didn't ask him, right? Part of being a rabbi in a community is recognizing that not everybody asks you their halakhic questions, and even when they ask you, they don't always listen to your answers. So Chalfon HaKohen says he didn't. And then he says there's some room to justify the way the others do it, meaning they don't send it without a bag, to say that maybe even though the Jews of Gerba were by and large Sfardim, which should mean they should follow the ruling of Shulchan Aruch, they should follow the ruling of Rav Sukaro in the main body of Shulchan Aruch, but he says maybe there's room for them to rely on Ramah. Ramah is Rav Moshe Isserles, who glossed the Shulchan Aruch with some comments about the Ashkenazic custom, where the Ashkenazic custom differed from the Sephardic custom. So the Ramah accepted the view that by the 16th century, and remember that Rav Moshe Chalfon HaKohen is writing in the 20th century, he said that now our times the wood of the barrels is already so well put together, it's too difficult to pry it apart to constitute a worry. Meaning we don't have to worry anymore about these issues because apparently coopers had become more adept at their craft than in the time of the Gemara. I just like saying coopers because it's not a word that we often use in its right meaning. So that's a possibility. Maybe the Jews of Gerba that Rav Moshe Chalfon is seeing, not listening to Shulchan Aruch, maybe they're relying on Ramah in that the wooden staves of barrels are no longer as easy to pry apart to get a little bit of wine out of it. In addition, another point that people don't always pay attention to and notice, the shippers were Muslims. Right? This is Gerba. So the people that they're dealing with are Muslims, which is different because it's clear in halacha that Muslims don't qualify as idolaters, right? Muslims worship one God. They worship a Kodesh Baruch Hu. They don't agree about all the things that we think about Hashem, and they don't accept many of the aspects of the Torah, truth and reality that we hold to. They claim other things. So it's not like one could say, Islam is just the same religion as Judaism. It's certainly not. And certainly if a Jew were to abandon Judaism for Islam, it's not like they're just doing fine because Jews have their own, right? So it's not the same religion, but it's clearly a monotheistic religion worshiping the one God, creator of heaven and earth. That's important for our purposes because when a non-Jew who's not an idolater touches wine, that creates only a drinking prohibition, an isur shtia, a prohibition on drinking that wine, but not a benefit prohibition, not a prohibition on hana'a. And that would be enough reason for the Sfaradim to follow the Rabbah, meaning if I'm shipping wine to sell it at a faraway market, and I'm doing it with Muslims, and I'm going to follow the Rabbah. So the Rabbah said that I'm allowed to do it this way. So even though I'm a Sfaradi and I shouldn't be following the Rabbah usually, but here, if I follow the Rabbah, and even if it were to turn out that the Rabbah weren't correct halakhically, the issue would be a prohibition of drinking, but I'm not drinking it. I'm benefiting from it because it's my business. I'm selling it, and that's allowed anyway. So Rav Moshe Kalfa Nakoin is suggesting maybe that's why the Sfaradim here in Jerba allow themselves. In addition, another room for leniency is there is in the Gemara a question about when we talk about non-Jews and what we worry about they would do or wouldn't do, and that we have to be careful that they might decide to take water, wine out of the barrels. There's an exception in that of that for that situation, which is called for an uman. An uman is a person who has a craft. They have a trade. They have a profession. And if they violate their professional standards, that will damage their livelihood to a much greater extent than whatever benefit they get by whatever action we're worried about they're doing. So this can apply in many situations, right? If you have a worry about whether, I don't know, a doctor will behave inappropriately with a woman patient. So let's say, I'm making this up, so but let's say, somebody would say, maybe a woman, a Jewish woman, shouldn't be allowed to go to a non-Jewish doctor, because who knows, blah, blah, blah. So part of the answer will be, no. There's professional standards, and if they don't adhere to their professional standards, their reputation is much more significant. It is much more significant, a loss to them, and that would stop them from doing it. I'm taping this right around when there are crazy things going on in the world, including, maybe by the time people are listening to this, it will be forgotten, Roger Ailes at Fox News being kicked out for behavior repeatedly, and we've seen this in other people too, and having gotten away with it for decades. So I wonder today where we can and cannot apply the status of an uman, saying that that will make sure that people behave certain ways, with certain appropriateness, and will realize that they need to, and that the loss to them is much greater than any value they get out of violating the standards. However that would work in other professions, here, Rav Chalfon HaKohen is saying that he thinks the ship's captain is such a craftsman, because the ship's captain's job is to transport goods. And if people get the impression that on the ship that this captain transports goods, that the goods don't always make it to their destination because either the captain or people on the ship take things out of those goods, so that would be such a damage to his reputation that he would never put up with that. Is another, he's not saying that's for sure true, but it's another room for leniency. So the situation you have is, Shulchan Aruch seems to say the wood barrels need to be in bags. The Ramah had already said that they don't need that. The Ashkenazi practice is not to put them in bags because the staves of the barrels are so well put together that you can't pry them open to get wine out of it. And maybe that's what the Sfaradi Rav Chalfon HaKohen would think, that you'd have to follow the Shulchan Aruch. But maybe there's room, especially these are Muslim shippers and not idolatrous shippers, maybe there's room to be lenient, especially since the captain is an uman, is a craftsman, and that helps as well. More than that, but making it worse, here, it's not clear that the barrel had the double seal that it needed. Part of that double seal was writing in Hebrew on the barrel, and you'd write half of the Hebrew word on the half of the letters was supposed to be on the cover, and half of them on the barrel. And the reason for that would be that if the non-Jew took off the barrel and was trying to reseal it, aligning the letters would require him knowing which letters were which and how they worked and stuff like that. It would be much more difficult. So that would help add to the difficulty of sealing it, which would help add to the likelihood the non-Jew wouldn't do it. Meaning it's not that we're trying to make sure we catch the non-Jew if they do it. It's we're trying to make it sure that they see it as being so problematic to get away with, they won't even bother doing it to begin with. But these people hadn't done that. They had put a piece of cloth around the top, and there's another piece of metal underneath it, and they wrote on the cloth. Even though that's true, Rav Chalfon HaKohen thinks that since it is two things you have to get through to get to the barrel, he thinks that does qualify as a double seal. Another issue was that the hole in the barrel, right? This is what you might think of it as a spigot, right? We said there was a hole in the barrel and has a peg stopping it up, but it's not sealed. So we had said that if it had been sealed, that would be like a double seal because you'd have to open the seal and then pull out the peg to get to the wine. Here it wasn't sealed. So maybe that's another problem. So once again, the fact that Muslims are not idolaters leaves him room for leniency. His leniency was that one seal would be good enough. And the seal here was that the peg was well fastened into the hole. To get the peg out of the hole would really be like breaking a seal because it's so well put in. And he quotes Yeridaya, Kuf Yudchet 118, Seif Yudchet, paragraph 18, which says that anything which is prohibited rabbinically and is left with a non-Jew only needs one seal. That's halacha. So here you have something which, even if the non-Jew, the Muslim, had taken from it, would only be prohibited rabbinically because it's stam yenam, and that only behana beshtiyah, that only drinking and not behana. Huh? And it has, he's saying the one peg counts as a seal. Then in Kuf Lamed, where we had started, Shulchan Aruch adds that if a person is leaving the item in a particular place, so let's say I go on a ship and I load the barrels onto this captain's ship, or he loads the barrels onto the ship, but he says, and here's their place. So there too, the Shulchan Aruch says you only need one seal because the place is sort of a seal. Why is the place sort of a seal? Because you have to return the barrel to its exact place. Depending on how they're stacked or how it works, it's not so simple to do that, so therefore that would be good enough as well. Now why? So why is the peg count as a seal? Rav Chalfon HaKohen says because the peg is so firmly entrenched, so it's put in so well that it would take a lot of effort to pull it out, and the barrel has a place, so moving it runs a risk of discovery. That together makes it good enough that you don't have to worry about it. To add to this and help with this conclusion, he points out that the peg in this case was also almost flush with the wood. The Tzemach Tzedek, which is another book of response, had said, and a very well-respected one, had said that the more difficult, as soon as you make the peg more difficult to access than it could be, that's a reason you don't need an extra seal. So in the Tzemach Tzedek's case, I think it was exactly flush with the barrel. That made it really hard, because then you had to dig in to get it out. You don't have to use a cork, like a bottle opener, a corkscrew of some sort to get it out. So that was true, he says, of this pig. It was close enough to the barrel that you couldn't just pull it out quickly and then put it in quickly. You'd have to really pull out or whatever, and the point was, you're not supposed to, since it is theft, the non-Jews are not going to just do it casually, they're going to try to do it surreptitiously, and this peg was far enough in that it wouldn't happen. So in cases like that, right, especially since there's writing on top of the barrel and they know that we're watching, right, the writing on top of the barrel also sends a signal that not only can't you reseal it easily, but the Jews care and are watching and are careful. That also supports ruling leniently. Helping us out, there's one more opinion that says, there's other opinions that say that if you have a non-Jew who's like a Muslim, who's a not idolater non-Jew, who's a monotheistic non-Jew, and he touches wine but doesn't realize or intend to, unintentional or unwitting, right? Doesn't intend to. There are those who hold that doesn't produce any prohibition. We don't rule that way, but there are those who do rule that way. And for them, the problem is that the idolater might touch it intentionally and use it for worship, right? That's where this all comes from. It comes from Yei Nesach. Yei Nesach was, as my teacher, Rabbi Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, used to point out, it was like a very quick thing in the times of the Gemara. There was some form of service where a non-Jew would put his hand in some wine and flip it over, and that was an act of worship to his Avodah Zarah, to his idolatry, and that made all the wine in that thing now connected to, or part of wine, that had Avodah Zarah done with it. So that's the original prohibition. In many of these cases, when the Chazal extend that for protective purposes, they have two factors. They'll extend one of the two factors, but not both. So, since the primary problem here is the intentional touch of an idolater, they would prohibit the unintentional touch of an idolater, and they would prohibit the intentional touch of a non-idolater. But to add an intention to prohibit the unintentional touch of a non-idolater, these opinions held that would not be included, that doesn't create a prohibition at all. And in the other cases, by the way, if an idolater touches it without realizing it, or a non-idolater touches it while realizing it, that only creates, as we've said before, an isur shtiyah, a drinking prohibition, not a benefit prohibition. So, in our case, if the non-Jew, right, let's say he did get to the wine somehow. So the two main ways we can imagine this non-Jew getting to the wine would be either to pull out the peg, for all that it's very close, let's say he found a good way, right? There's corkscrews that pull out the cork really quickly and help you put it back in, whatever it is, pulls it out. Or he does open a slot between the staves of the barrel. So the problem for us is not the wine that he took out. The wine he took out is gone if he drank it. The problem for us is that it's considered touching the rest of the wine, because by moving a whole barrel of wine, moving a lot of wine, since liquid is all connected, we think of it as the non-Jew having touched all of that as well. But the Rambam rules that that's considered unintentional touch, and Rav Chalfa HaKohen in Shucho of Initial thinks that Yerodeah 124.7 only quotes the Rambam. He doesn't think that. He says that only quotes the Rambam, but he thinks that since Shulchan Aruch only quotes the Rambam, it means Shulchan Aruch agrees to that situation. So that would be another help for this, because if you hold that the not that unwitting touch of a non-idolatrous non-Jew, that's what you have here, and therefore you're okay. And then finally, he says the missing wine doesn't prove anything, because the barrel could have gotten a hole in it, the seal at the top might have been as tight as we thought, so it spilled out. So that doesn't prove anything, meaning you can go two ways with that missing wine. It could be that you think of it as very significant because it means so much wine is missing, somebody must have taken it, or you take it the other way, so much wine is missing, it can't be the non-Jew who did it. He does know, he says, of a more stringent ruling in the Shut Yochi Nevoa, so what do you do with precedent? So he asserts his right, since there's a debate about these issues, and since there is a lenient view, he thinks he can follow the lenient view, especially since he says the Yochi Nevoa was dealing with idolatrous non-Jews. And also, wooden barrels have improved. That's always an interesting question in halacha as to when we accept the technological issues have allowed us to change our halachic approach. Here, he's not changing it that far. I mean, it's not like for 2,000 years, Jews have always said wooden barrels are completely usher, and he's saying, oh, they've gotten better, they're fine. He's pointing out that the Rambam already said they were fine for Ashkenazic Jews, so he's got precedent to say that. Now, the Rambam said it, and his, so you'd have step by step, but he's not completely innovating, and therefore he thinks you don't have to worry about the stage being pried open. So, interestingly, the tshuva had started being, you have a simple paragraph in Shulchan Aruch, and Rav Chalfa HaKohen has to deal with it, and it turns out he finds much more room for leniency than looked out at the beginning. The barrels had changed, shipping is a profession that cares about its reputation for not tampering, Muslims are idolaters, and all of that together created these leniencies to allow the rest of this barrel to be used, and that is a response of a day by Rav Chalfa HaKohen in Shulchan Aruch. Have a great day.